Welcome to another round of the Best of SDHAM from the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you, and thanks for dropping by, as you always do, whether it is at 92.9 The Game in the Off the Woodwork podcast section or on the Odyssey app, however you access this, large device or small. For those that may not be familiar, SDHAM is the morning show that is attached to the Soccer Down Here Network at Soccer Down Here on all the social media. You can find it live Monday through Friday, 9:05 a.m. Eastern Time for 2 hours, usually more. So 9:05 until 11:05 a.m.-ish, where we go over all of the news of the morning, and we kind of let you know what you might have missed with experts and pundits and storylines and cool stories and guests that can come across our bow every single Monday through Friday. We try to bring them to you, and we try to also make sure that your day is ready to go by the time we are out the door. What to watch, where to watch it, how to watch it, all the things all in one place at SDHAM and the Soccer Down Here Network. This go around, we kind of go a little worldwide with you, and we've always been one to look for the interesting stories, the ones that might be close to you, even though you may not necessarily know it at the time. It might hit a heartstring. It might hit something close to you. You might sit there and go, hey, that sounds familiar. Well, we've got a couple of instances with that this upcoming week here on the Best of SDHAM. We go into the story of Hamilton Academical in Scotland. It's a bit of a Rootsian story, and you can also get the Roots on the SDH Network powered by our friends at NoFo Brewing. But Hamilton Academical, one of the oldest living soccer clubs on the planet, they were in a serious financial bind. It was to the point to where paychecks were being missed, and the manager for the team that had suffered points penalties, and they were in the third level of the Scottish pyramid, was basically telling everybody, look, nobody's getting paid. We've got a match on Saturday. We'll put a team together and we'll see what happens. Well, they now have someone who has picked up all but 2.5% of the ownership of Hamilton Academical and is looking toward the new future. Rob Edwards, the founder of Morley Sports Management, joined us, went into the idea of the purchase, their MCO, and what they look on and look forward to in building with Hamilton Academical from the Scottish Pyramid. That's guest number one. Guest number two, something else is going to be happening a week from now. It's going to be the beginning of the OFC Pro League, the first ever Pro League in Oceania. And for this one, we went and caught up with one of the front office folks that is attached to a franchise. It is Robbie Cryan, and he is the president of the Wynnum Wolves soccer franchise in Brisbane, Australia. But he is also deputy chair for the Solomon Kings Club that is in the Oceania Pro League. It's going to be eight teams. It's going to be a league that is going to get all of Oceania wrapped up into league play. And so we have our first foray in learning about it by catching up with Robbie Cryan and finding out what's going on with the Solomon Kings and what it means to have this league launch basically a week from now. So that is guest number two. Guest number three is a semi-regular feature that we have on the SDH Network. It is the Friday Free Kick, and it's with our friends at Beyond Goals Mentoring. And for this one, we go to Columbus, Ohio, and catch up with our friend Michael Parkhurst. We find out about Beyond Goals Mentoring that he and Greg Garza started a handful of years ago, how they grew in 2025, what they're looking for in 2026, and some of the issues and what they continue to learn as they go forward. So it's a trip to Ohio to find out about tutoring and mentoring the next generations of soccer players. It's a trip to Brisbane, Australia, and find out what's going on for the growth of something for the first time ever. And to lead things off, our first visit to suburban London, where we catch up with Morley Sports Management founder Rob Edwards about saving Hamilton Academical and the future. Here's our interview with Rob. This one is cool on a bunch of different levels, and we get to ask a couple of different sets of questions to our buddy Rob Edwards here as we bring him in. We get to find out the why, we get to find out the how, we get to find out the where, and we get to find out the what as we were going through everything that's going on. So we go across the Atlantic and catch up with Rob Edwards, founder of Morley Sports Management. Good morning, Rob. Thanks for dropping by the morning show.
Good morning. No pleasure. Nice to be on.
So let me go ahead, and I'm just going to go ahead and start from the beginning. What propelled you to start Morley Sports Management and go into that path? When we open up the CV of Rob Edwards, why did you start MSM in the first place?
In reality, MSM found me. I have a finance and business background, and an opportunity came along within soccer in Wales. It was something that I wasn't looking for. I pressed the inquiry button. It was at the start of a global pandemic, so what could possibly go wrong? Back in March 2020, and it seemed an opportunity that you don't normally have access to. There tends to be a significant barrier to entry within sport. It's either a club that is in a really difficult position and generally unsavable or needs millions of pounds, or it's extremely well run and there's obviously attracts huge value for somebody to come in and take over that business. So it just seemed an opportunity that was a low barrier to entry. I'm a massive football fan, or soccer. Sorry, I should get
that. I know. No, either way, works perfectly fine, dude. You're good.
Yeah, I'm a massive soccer fan. So it would combine my two passions of soccer and business. So I took the plunge, and we acquired Haverford West County, who play in the Welsh Premier League. I would only do that really if there could be some long-term value gained. The Welsh League is quite underfunded. It's not necessarily a league that attracts huge sponsorship or clubs that can achieve considerable amounts of profit. It's very much local, community focused, league generally run by passionate fans or groups of passionate fans as a committee. So it was a way in and try and build something from the ground up. And over the last 5 years, we've had big success on and off the pitch. We've managed to maintain Cymru Premier Football. We had our best season ever last season when we finished third in the league. We qualified for the UEFA Conference League for the second time in the last three seasons. We've managed to turn the academy around, and actually our under-19s won the domestic treble, which no club in Wales has ever done, to compete in European football. And in a town of 14,000 people, we have a real big community social impact. We've had over 1,000 spectators in four games in the last 12 months. And based on the size of the local area, is a real big uptake. So that was always the blueprint to then take that plan into other sports, other regions. We weren't necessarily just a traditional MCO focusing on acquiring soccer clubs. We see a more holistic approach to business within sport. And that led to the acquisition of Ohio Valley Wrestling in Kentucky on your side of the pond back in May 2025. And subsequently, as of the last few days, one of the oldest clubs in the world in Hamilton Academical that has fallen on hard times. We tend to have found a niche for distressed legacy assets nowhere near where I live, and that tend to fit the bill. So yeah, we're on our third business. We're looking to continue to grow and focus again purely on opportunities where there's lower risk and much bigger upside, and the challenge of trying to turn, I guess, struggling or undervalued assets around into something that has not just commercial value but also community and social impact, which is really important. We're of the belief that every sports club, big or small, should be a community asset and should be something that people can emotionally buy into and invest in, and that's what we're trying to create within different areas, different regions, and hopefully larger assets going forward.
Rob Edwards from Morley Sports Management dropping by the morning show. And I want to bookmark Ohio Valley. I want to bookmark OVW, and I'll put it toward the end, considering that Monday Night Raw was last night and SmackDown's on Friday, and we'll get into that in a bit. When it comes to looking at products, and you mentioned, obviously, distressed assets that are far away from the home office, but how do you come across something like a Hamilton Academical to sit there and go, yeah, this sounds like something that's in our bailiwick? How did you come across that as an idea to pick them up and add to the portfolio?
For me, it's a massive club. It's been in the top division within Scotland, which is a high level coefficient European country. It's not a club that I necessarily would have felt that we would have had an opportunity if things were going well for them. It's a club that I've followed for a number of years in their decline era. And it came to a point where the club was very close to going out of existence. I mean, we're probably talking days. So we tried to get under the bonnet as much as we could. We don't want to be involved in businesses that fail. We've been two for two so far. So we kind of want to keep that streak going. But the risk is relatively low in that we've saved the club from immediate liquidation and, and erasure of that club from the Scottish League. We did it because we wanted to save the club, because it's something that we, it's a club that we've grown up following. We've grown up watching. It's huge catchment just on the outskirts of Glasgow, massive history. As I said, one of the oldest clubs in the world, back in 1874, the only professional club that started from a school that's still going. So there's a lot to preserve. And as passionate football fans, we wanted to do what we could and use our experience to try and save the club. But then on the upside, we know if we can get through the next 3 or 4 months and we can find some sort of stability, I know from next season onwards, we will be in a position where we can have a real solid foundation to get the club back to where it belongs. And if we can do that, the value of the business is considerable, and our stock as operators to then be able to attract more opportunities of this level becomes a lot higher.
The reason that we stumbled across the story with Hamilton Academical was, frankly, the conversation that the manager had on social media last week that we ran in our Roots program, where it's like, yeah, you know, we're not able to, you know, players aren't getting paid. We'll have something resembling an 18 going up against, I think it was East Fife last weekend. The event, the match actually does get frozen out literally because of weather conditions and everything. But that's where they were. They were that close to, like, you know, 15 point penalty, lower half of the table, all those things. I mean, they were that close, it seems, to being just blown off the map by a previous owner that didn't the SPFL sit there with the previous owner and sit there and go, no, you're not fit, you're done, kind of a thing?
Yeah, it was also the director of football, who was the director of the company. There's been long-standing legacy issues and bad decision making that has been made, and it ultimately led to a point where the club was deducted points last season and relegated into League One, and consistent breaches of rules from the director of football has led to the point that the club has again been deducted 15 points. We've walked into additional sanctions that could result in more penalties. It's something that is going to take some time to unpick and stabilize, not just from a financial point of view, but get through any legacy issues that we're going to be stepping into. But like you said, if the club weren't able to fulfill that fixture, their ability to play in the league could have been revoked. Administration was a very distinct possibility. The likelihood of an administration finding a buyer before the club would effectively be removed from the league was going to be very, very slim. So administration or liquidation, the chances of survival were going to be very slim. So we have a team that we've had success in sport within the ventures we've had so far, and also in other businesses. So we just decided that, you know, we want to jump in back ourselves and do what we can to keep the club going, because there's a huge potential on the other side of what is a very turbulent spell at the moment.
How hard is it to put fandom aside and look at it strictly from that business perspective of, okay, this is a distressed asset. We know that we can turn it around. Obviously, the confidence is there. You wouldn't have picked up 97.5% of the ownership in the beginning. How hard is it to put fandom aside in a situation like this, knowing that the task seems to be fairly daunting, at least to get them out of that hole to where they can be stabilized a little bit?
Yeah, I think, look, this is not our first opportunity now. I think going in Salford West 5 years ago, I was very much, I didn't know how to run a football club, or I was literally just a football fan. I think now with the group that have assembled, we're sport business operators, and we've learned to look solely at what we can see in front of us. And in the Hamilton circumstance, we had to be very honest with every conversation we had with anybody prior to and since taking over, in that we're going to have to make some very difficult decisions on and off the pitch that could affect his ability to compete on the pitch this season. It could mean that we're not going to be competitive, and relegation is a real possibility. It would mean that the wage budget has to be trimmed significantly. It means that anyone in any position that doesn't add the value that we need right now will probably have to go. And it's a victim of its past life, rather than us coming in and looking to just cut costs and make as much money as we can. In the next 3 or 4 months, we need to save the club. So its ability to survive on the pitch is kind of irrelevant against the overall picture of being able to survive off the pitch and rebuild from there. So yeah, we were very honest from the beginning with everyone in any position that remained that we're going to have to make some really difficult decisions. I like to think we're all good people. We're all human. People's livelihoods and jobs are at stake. But if we continue in the way that the club has been run, then there will be no club, therefore no future, no livelihood, no job. So we have to look at this as we see it in black and white, and anyone that we feel is not going to be able to contribute to the levels that we feel, or we don't get value, or the club just physically can't afford, then we have to make those calls. And as difficult as it would be, it's the interests of the club.
Do the fans and the diehard supporters understand that aspect of it going in? Do they get it right now?
I think so. The reaction has been really positive. We've been discussing with the Supporters Association for probably since our initial inquiry before Christmas. I was actually in Kentucky when I had my first introduction to Hamilton. So it was been going on for, we probably haven't had the length of due diligence that we would have liked to have done, purely because of the immediate dangers that the club had. But the fan reaction has been good. We've tried to be really honest in our communication. We put our first statement out on Sunday evening after the announcement that we were taken over, and we just wanted to say, look, we're all in, but there's going to be difficult decisions. Just please, like, be patient, support us, and hopefully you'll understand what we're going to be doing over the next few months is for the benefit of the long-term future of the club. So yeah, we tried to be really honest without being morbid and negative. We are positive in that we wouldn't have taken it on if we didn't think we could do it, but we know that the cost base the club operates on is completely unsustainable, and the revenues are just, they're not there, and they're going to take time to build. So the obvious is to stop money going out the door and regroup, and then find ways to increase revenue going into the next season.
How hard is it to do due diligence on the fly like that?
It's difficult. The clubs obviously had a very sketchy or probably not the right word. There's been multiple involvements from various people. I guess some have different agendas. So the ability to have a clear understanding, due diligence is difficult when you have a completely full, clean data room. When you don't have that, it's even harder. So a lot of it is on gut feel and looking at the wider opportunity. So we went in not knowing everything that was going to hit us in the face over the next few days. Obviously, we're 48 hours into our ownership of the club, so we're only into our second working day. And the next few months, I'm sure there are going to be things that come out that we probably weren't prepared for. But it's a decision we decided to take on and deal with situations as they come, because it's in no one's interest that this club fails. So we're hopeful, and we have had positive conversations so far with creditors and governing bodies and those that have had issues with the club over the past to say, look, our intentions are good. We've proven that we can be successful in sport. We have a good reputation in this arena, and just be patient and we'll get there. But we do need that support as well.
When you're going into, and this is all, you know, open doors that we really haven't had the chance to talk about in circumstances, but when you're going in to have a conversation with a creditor, when you're going to, when someone's kind of, you know, you're in your office, and that creditor doesn't even knock on the door. They just open the door and they kind of put their head in around the side and sit there and go, hi, you know, it's us. What are those conversations like when you're having to, what it sounds like, pick up somebody else's mess, and you're sitting there sorting everything out there on the floor, and papers are all over the place or wherever you're sorting stuff out, and then you have all these dudes knocking on your door? What are those conversations like to have folks understand the context of, hey, we're the new guy here, just be patient with us, we'll get things sorted out? What are those conversations like to have?
It varies. All we can be is honest. And look, fortunately, the Hamilton situation has been very, very prominent in the local press for a long, long time. So no one's approaching Hamilton for a bill or for an unpaid invoice without knowing the situation that we're in. So I think there's been some good understanding so far that at least they feel that there's somebody here with the best interests of the club at heart and wants the club to succeed. If the club succeeds, then ultimately creditors will be paid. As I said a little while ago, if the club ceases to exist or administration or liquidation is a possibility, then the club will not have the assets to necessarily repay that debt anyway. And that those kind of processes can go on for months and months. So it's just trying to be realistic with our situation and communicate. And hopefully if we can adhere to a proposal or agree in a proposal, and we can adhere to that, then hopefully that will start to rebuild. That'll rebuild trust with such people and can make for a much healthier relationship going forward. But yeah, we just have to be upfront with the situation. We have every intention of settling this and coming to an arrangement, but you have to understand our position. And as I said, fortunately, most people within football, not just local football, will be familiar with Hamilton's situation. So it's been relatively smooth so far in terms of having those open and honest chats, but a lot of it is down to the creditors themselves and I guess their position.
Did you ever think that Morley would end up with something akin to a burgeoning MCO where you're in Wales, you're now in Scotland, and did you ever think that this was going to be this path for Morley at any point?
I hope so. That was the intention. We wanted to build a portfolio of sports, but not just sports clubs, but sports businesses incorporating tech kit, where we were open to what that field looks like. It was but more based on the opportunity rather than necessarily where it was or what sport it was in. I'd never imagined that I would be in charge of running OVW. That's absolutely insane to think that me 5 years ago looked forward and working with Al Snow is just a ridiculous thought to have. But it's more so, it's just the opportunity that comes along. And we've had many opportunities put in front of us that just hasn't felt right. Companies that were in a much better standing than Hamilton, but Hamilton felt right, and we saw the opportunity. So it was always the idea to take on other businesses, love to take on larger projects such as Hamilton, and continue to develop that. And I think the more success we have, the more opportunities will fall on our laps, and the more we can leverage that when it comes to raising any additional investment and partnerships to take on some of these bigger projects and grow the overall value of MSM as an entity.
So obviously I'm already looking at the next club that's added to MCOs. It's like, yeah, you're putting out what's going on with Hamilton. I'm already looking at like clubs 3, 4, and 5. Are you tied to geography when you're looking for properties outside of what you've got? Like when you had the first pickup, you know, in Wales, were you looking at Haverford West County and sitting there going, yeah, okay, if we do things here, we could go here, we can do this geographically? Or is it just stuff that in your massive Rolodex of information and daily consumption of things, yeah, okay, that sounds like a place where we can go to help things out and have all of the crossovers and the interaction that you're looking for?
Yeah, it's purely opportunity by opportunity. There's the main criteria is really we like to work with legacy brands that have a history, and we can use that to create a new message. We've done that with OVW. So that's really something that we like. We like something with history that we can dive into and rebrand and build on a lot of that. But it's not restricted to sport or geography. As you can see, it's purely, we'd only get involved in something we actually understand. So we wouldn't get involved in a sport that we don't understand. We don't understand the rules, the dynamic, the culture around it. That's really, if we don't think we can go in and hit the ground running and make a quick impact, then that's probably something that we will avoid, unless we have someone with us that has that expertise that we can bring into the business and partner with. So no, it really is quite unrestrictive in terms of where we go. It's purely the opportunity itself.
So are you getting to work mainly there from the Rob Edwards 101 office A number one, or do you have to leave? You have to leave where you are right now and go into an actual office. What's the dynamic currently for you when it comes to getting work done?
Yeah, well, I'm based in London. I tend to be here doing my day to day here. I like to be on the ground, and I love football. I love wrestling. I love going there and being around the team and watching the games and watching the shows and being in and around the community. I love Louisville as a city. I really enjoy spending time there. Obviously, Glasgow is going to be a new one for me. I've been in the past, but never in this capacity. I think it's we want to make a group of successful businesses, but we also want to enjoy it. And I think often you can lose that fun element, and you forget why you're doing things in the first place. I think you can be so focused on being successful, you lose that fun element. But in reality, the more success you have, the more fun you should have. So I like to be in and around the players, the coaching team, the staff. I like to be around the wrestling talent, the people in and around that business. So I do tend to travel quite a bit. There's obviously another destination now that I need to tick off. Fortunately, based in Northwest London, I'm not far from Heathrow Airport or most of the stations to get me where I need to get to. So it's easy enough for me to get around. But yeah, I'm based in London. I don't have an office necessarily, but it allows me to travel to see our assets and work from, keep an eye on everything else while I'm there.
So how did this OVW thing happen?
So I was actually introduced to Matt by Matt Jones, who's one of the minority partners, obviously a big character within the documentary. I was actually dipping my feet in the ocean for potential investment, because so far the opportunities so far have really just been bootstrapped and funded by me. I kind of had the idea that Haverford West was going in a good position. If I was really going to take this seriously as an MCO, I need to find, one, new opportunities, and two, potential backers to help me acquire or invest in such opportunities. And I was introduced to someone in the US who says, yeah, look, I may have some people that want to get involved. But a friend of a friend has just represented this company in Kentucky that has had someone come in and it's not quite working out. And they're now looking for somebody to come in and potentially either help, like put a proposal together for additional investment, or for someone to come in and be a part of the business. Obviously, at that point, I found out it was OVW. A massive wrestling fan growing up. I've not watched it probably since I was 16. Once you get to 16, kind of alcohol, sport, women kind of take over. So did you watch Raw last night? Wasn't the best chat up line. So I backed away from wrestling at that point. But look, I done my research. I watched wrestlers. Matt Jones was actually in Europe anyway, traveling. So he was in London, I think, literally 2 weeks after I was introduced to him. So I did what every Londoner does when a foreigner comes to town. I took him to an Indian restaurant, and we had a nice meal and a chat. And yeah, we left not really knowing where it would take us. We kept in touch. I said, look, why don't I come to Kentucky, just get a feel for the business. And I went in December last year and kind of really saw a big opportunity. I saw a lot of problems that, but I could see fixes for them quite quickly, which was the exciting bit. Discussions went on for a few months, and ultimately we put a proposition to take a majority interest in the business, take on day-to-day control, which happened on the 1st of May. And yeah, since then we're making slow but steady progress. I think with such a legacy brand, it's been diluted over the years as to what OVW actually is. So it's so difficult to sell a product when you don't actually know what the product does. It's like if you're a printer salesman trying to sell a Mustang, you need to understand what you're selling. And unfortunately, OVW didn't know what it was really at that point. So we put a clear identity, a clear message, where we see OVW within Louisville, where we see it within wrestling, and what our ambitions are. And a lot of people are bought into that. And yeah, it's still a way to go to where we feel it needs to be. But viewership is good. Attendances are good. We're attracting new partnerships, sponsorships locally. I think the production is great. And there's some exciting opportunities in this coming year that hopefully will change the dynamic of that business. But yeah, it was again, complete chance, but saw the opportunity in terms of where we feel we can take it. And it was too good to turn down at that time, and to be working with people like Doug Basham and Al Snow, people I watched as a kid, is actually it's incredible. And they're great people, and there's good people involved in the company that really want it to succeed.
always great to catch up and find out what's going on when it comes to historical franchises, and when you have situations like Hamilton Academical and what they were going through, to find someone like Rob who's interested in saving the club, seeing it grow, and where it goes from here. Great interview, and obviously we're going to be keeping an eye on what's going on with our friends at Hamilton Academical and Morley Sports Management. Morley Sports M on the 280-character app. This is the Best of SDHAM from the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you. Thanks for hanging out, as you always do. So, as promised, we go from London to Brisbane, and we find out what it's like to do something for the first time. And we catch up with Rabia Kriam, who is the deputy chair of Solomon Kings, and Robbie is also the president of Wynnum Wolves, and they are located in Australia, and they are part of the hub system when it comes to hosting what will be the Oceania Pro League, the OFC Pro League, coming up in a week's time. First ever launch of a league of this kind in that particular part of the planet. And here's our conversation with Rabia Kriam to find out what's going on with the launch, what it means to the Solomon Islands, what it means to Oceania, and what it means to the sport. What is it like for you and everyone that is attached to the league, whether you're a player, administrator, front office, whatever? What's it like to be at this point where you're a week and a half from starting it for real?
I don't know whether it's panic stations yet, but I think it's been an exciting time for everybody. I mean, obviously, the league was announced earlier this year. The teams were only finalized in September last year, 2025. So it's been a lot of work by a lot of clubs. I mean, obviously, our club, the Solomon Kings, which is a partnership between Wynnum Wolves and Brisbane and the Solomon Islands Federation, been very, very, very hectic. I think the challenging part, you're trying to create a club in a short space of time. And so it's been very, I think it's been exciting. I think the exciting part, the players are here in Brisbane in a camp now, ready to go to New Zealand next week for the first game. So players got onto the training field real. Prior to that, it was all administration, it was all paperwork. But I think across the board, there's an excitement, in particular, I think, in the islands, in the Pacific Islands, where, you know, I mean, this is the first professional competition in the Oceania region. And, you know, from the Solomon Islands team, the Solomon Kings is the very first professional sporting team. No other sport's done it. So it's an exciting time for the country, exciting time for football. But I think for the whole region, everyone's excited about what it's going to look like because it's something new. And there's no home and away games. We're in hubs, and which will be an interesting time to have.
And you mentioned the eight franchises. Just for the record, it's Auckland FC, it's Bula, which is based in Fiji, PNG Hikari FC, which is in Papua New Guinea, Solomon Kings, Tahiti United, Vanuatu United, South Island United in New Zealand, and South Melbourne FC. And you mentioned the hubs. And obviously, when we're talking about Solomon specifically, it's not like you can hop in an Uber from where you are and go to the stadium and have a home and away with somebody. It's like you can't have a home and away with PNG Hikari in the Solomon Islands. And so the hub idea, I think, adds audience to it, and it adds interest from other places in addition to those initial franchise locations.
I think so. Look, I think the thing, you got to give it to the OFC and FIFA for backing this, because otherwise without their support this wouldn't have happened. So I think logistically, from stadium facilities to the travel component, the hub idea has a lot of merit. And you know, obviously for the Solomons team, we started training in Solomon Islands prior to Christmas. We arrived here in Australia just after Christmas for New Year to base ourselves in a camp here, because it's quicker to go to Brisbane to Auckland than it is from Solomon Islands. So from the Solomons team is that they actually, the players won't go back home till February. So we will go to Auckland next week. They'll come back to Brisbane for a couple of days, train, then get on a plane and go to PNG for 2 weeks, come back to Brisbane for 2 weeks, go to Melbourne for 2 weeks, and then they'll fly back to Solomon Island. So it's a big, it's not only just about for the players adapting to professional life, it's the travel component. And I suppose it's, you know, from the coaches and the club's perspective, is to make it as much as family orientated for the players who are really just living out of a suitcase for such a period of time. I mean, it's a little bit different for the New Zealand teams. It's more for the island team, in particular a team like Solomon Islands. Logistically, the travel component is so, it's not
quick. What has it been like for player interest? Because I would imagine that you across the board need a specific kind of individual who understands the demands of the travel component, understands the demands of what it's like to be something from absolute zero. And you have to be a special kind of constitution, both athletically and emotionally, to get into something like this and understand its gravity, I would think.
Yeah, look, I think that the part is obviously from the Solomon Islands. A lot of the players have had experience offshore to come and play in Australia or in New Zealand. I think the hard part has been once the players have got over, the first day is like being kids inside a lolly shop. It's all excitement. What can I do? And now we're sort of 2 weeks into a camp and it's like saying, oh, right, okay, now we're going to do this every day. So a lot of the time the coaches have been working to make sure the players have an intensive training session, have their downtime, the meal components have been an important part. I think it's been good for the teams like the Solomon Islands to be here. I think it's the two-week camp here in Australia has allowed them to be bond together because they're going into camp, and we're ready for it. Where, you know, other teams aren't in camps. They're working out of their own countries. We made a decision that we'll bring them here to Brisbane to train in facilities and bring the team together. But look, from the players' perspective, I think they're excited, especially for the Solomon Island players. This is, you know, to be the first professional team in your country is a big honour. For these players, they're starting to earn money, which is unheard of, you know. So I think as much as it is for the football excitement, it's more about, you know, down the track, I'm the first player to play professional football in the Solomon Islands. So I think it's a challenge. I think as we get to the first hub, you know, to play three games in 10 days, it's a big ask for the squad. Then you're coming back, then you're going to go to PNG, which is, again, different weather conditions. So, look, I think it's been all-encompassing from the coaching staff. A lot of it's been, as much as been on the field, it's off the field management. I mean, I know tomorrow, for example, we've got a big day out for them, the leisure out to one of the islands, Minjibra. They're going to go through a cultural day with our Indigenous friends. They've got going to the ocean, go to some cultural centres, taste some exotic foods. I think we're trying to make it into as much as a football experience, but it's a cultural experience.
And I've been trying to get as educated as possible in all of these things as you're getting right up with the league. What's it like to have not just the head of a football federation come and visit you there, but then you end up with Prime Minister Masele come and kind of see what's going on? What's it like to have that kind of a dignitary come, because he knows how important it is in the grand scheme of things as well?
I think when I went to the Solomon Islands back in July when we first met the Prime Minister, and, you know, what was supposed to be a half-hour meeting ended up being an hour-and-a-half meeting, I think we sometimes underestimate the power of sport. I think sometimes we, you know, like in America and Australia, we take it for granted that, you know, sport's around. I think the impact this team will have off the field is far greater than anyone else will benefit, because this is life-changing for those kids. It's giving the kids in the Solomon Islands the hope and the vision that they're going to play at that highest level. So I think it's, and for the Prime Minister, it's been a significant part of the changes that's going to happen. And he understands, you know, the young kids in the Solomon Islands to aspire to play professional sport. I mean, football's the number one sport in the Solomon Islands, and having a team there is only going to be improve every year. And ultimately, what it's going to lead is World Cup qualifications for the country. Under-17s, you know, the under-23s, first team. I mean, the goal for the club, our partnership with the federation, is for the Solomon Islands to qualify in 2034 for the World Cup. That's our goal. You know, if we get this right, and I know we will off the field work technically improved both on and off the field, there is no reason why the Solomon Islands can't qualify for a World Cup within 8 years.
And we have covered the Marshall Islands quest as well. The Marshall Islands Soccer Federation, we've been in lockstep with them ever since they tried to, they announced that they were going to be trying to go down this same road. When it comes to, I guess, Oceania in general, obviously you have the Pro League coming online, but where would you say the game is right now when it comes to infrastructure, ability, number of athletes? Where is Oceania right now in the world sphere, do you think? Where does the work need to go?
I think there's no doubt infrastructure is a key component. And we're lucky in the Solomon Islands that we've got a national sports center that was built for the Oceania Games a number of years ago. So they've got the facilities there. There are other countries that need more infrastructure. I think the biggest thing for the improvement of the game is going to be the technical improvement, and that is improving coaches and administration. You know, I think technically, you know, the players are there. It's just providing with the right coaching, the right structure off the field. You know, we're lucky in the Solomons that we've got the facilities. Obviously, we need more facilities, but at the start, you appreciate what you've got. But I think the biggest impact out of this, of having a professional team, is the impact on coaches, to upskill the coaches, to make sure that the 10-year-old today is getting the right coaching to make him ready for an under-17s, under-18s. And I think that's what we're going to see. But overall, I think from a player perspective, technically, very highly regarded. I think it's more, you know, they've got the skills. It's having that football understanding the game more technically from a coach perspective. And I think that's going to be the biggest thing we'll have.
How much of a learning experience has it been for you and everybody there at Wynnum Wolves to embrace the idea, to understand that Solomon is going to be there as a part of this fabric of this thing going forward? How much of a learning experience has it been for you dealing with the idea of the Solomon Kings?
Look, I think our club's had a history with the Solomon Islands up to 30 years ago. It's really interesting how this all came about. You know, after the coup, I think in the early 2000s, late 90s, Solomon Football went out to around Australia saying, does any team want to come to play us? And Wynnum Wolves was the team to put their hand up and said, we would like to come. And that's how the relationship first started. And over the years, we've had hosted players, but it sort of fell off during COVID and before COVID. But I think when the idea was that there was going to be an Oceania Pro League, we looked at it, would Wynnum Wolves enter a team on its own, like South Melbourne? And we looked at it and said, looked at the pros and cons and thought, well, you know, the pros, why don't we partner with a nation and really for Solomon Islands was an easy fit for us because of our previous relationship. I think the learning has been is we assumed they didn't have infrastructure. First thing, but when you go there and see the facilities, you've got facilities. I think what it does, it actually brought the love of football back for a number of us, because when we went there, football's the number one sport. So you actually, you know, and then say, you know what does it mean for these kids to play football, which is far greater than other places? And, you know, thinking we take things for granted in Australia. We take our infrastructure, we take our facilities, we take our coach, we take everything for granted. But when you go there and see what little some of these players have or teams have, and the enjoyment they get out of football, we can make a difference. And I think what it does, it brings humility back. It also teaches you the power of our game. And I think that's really what it was for us. And, you know, we main values as the Solomon Islands Football Federation and the country itself. So it was an easy link because we get on and we're, you know, both have the similar values and what we want to do in the game.
Is there an expectation on the field in year one when it comes to Solomon Kings, or is it, let's go ahead and have patience and just see where it goes? Is there an on-the-field expectation?
Well, I think everyone who plays sport wants to win, you know, and I think everyone wants to play. We want to make the top four because that's the goal. That's what you play sport for. I think what we want to be able to do is be competitive, give ourselves the opportunity to be in that winning position. And I think once you give yourself the opportunity, who knows what happens. I think what we can do is provide the experience as much off the field. We can't control what happens on the field. That's players and other things. But I think we can provide everything off the field to give the team the best opportunity to be competitive and win. We've done our job. I think we just want to be competitive, that the country can be proud of the team, win, lose, or draw.
Robbie Kriam hanging out with us. He's the president of Wynnum Wolves. Also, how would you best describe your role with Solomon Kings with the OFC Pro League? Grand Exalted Poobah. Well, how would you break it down?
Well, I'm the deputy chairman of the club, and currently doing a bit of helping out with administration as a CEO at the same time. So, I'm one of the lucky ones. I can volunteer to do this job, and I think when you do this thing because you love it, it's not a job for me. And so, I think for us, it's you can only build things once. You can't do it twice. And so, I think if we can build this, set it the right scene, and contribute. And I think when you're working with good people, they might not have the skills, but they've got the values. You can always upskill someone. Can't teach people values. And I think one of the things that it's exciting about working with the whole Solomon Islands Football Federation is the values that they hold as people, as a nation, as a sporting organisation. And they're so willing to learn and listen and be guided. And I think that only makes you a good person. And so I think if we can continue that, and as a football club, as long as we don't lose who we are, and, you know, we're humble when we win, we're humble when we lose, the club will be a success. And I think, you know, ultimately we want to upskill more administrators out of the Solomon Islands that can run this team. That's when we've achieved everything we want to do.
I know that community is important there with Wynnum Wolves, because all you have to do is look at the impact that a cyclone can have, and have an entire community come out there, and it's like, all right, what do we need to do? Let's clean things up. Let's dust off. Yeah. Let's put on our hip waders. What was it? 4 hours where you had a 1,000 people, 4 hours, and everything was cleaned up, and you're ready to get back to it.
Yeah, we were. I mean, it's really interesting. 2022, we suffered the first flood, which is significant, and, you know, within 4 hours, we had over 1,000 people. We cleaned the whole place up. You know, we suffered significant damage, and we thought, okay, let's move on. Then, obviously, last year in February 2025, Cyclone Alfred, floods, and we thought, here we go again. We've gone through it again, and again, the people just came up. And so I think one thing, you know, the power of football and creating a community culture, it's more than just a football club. It's a place where people feel comfortable, where people feel home. The people can be the best they can be, whether it be playing academy football or I just want to play with my friends, whether you're a male or a female. But I think if you create that sort of safe environment where you can take kids off the streets or out of computers and put them in a sporting environment, I think that's what we've achieved. And, you know, when you look at the growth of this club, you know, this year we'll crack 1,800 players. Over 110 teams we'll have this year, which will make us probably the biggest football club in the country. I do that with people, and we're run. Yes, we've got full-time technical people, we've got some full-time administrators, but predominantly our committee is all volunteers. People like myself and others, we give up our time because we, you know, as someone who came to Australia as a migrant, when I came to Australia as an 8-year-old playing and I played rugby league, not football, the football club looked after me. So it became a second home for me. And I think sometimes we've lost that way. I don't know what it's like in America because, you know, sometimes here in Australia we focus on who's going to be the next professional rather than saying who's going to be the next good person.
Yeah, and what we like to do here at the SDH Network, we are a firm believer that a rising tide lifts all boats. And for us, it's important to tell a story, whether it's around the corner or whether it's three quarters of the way around the world, because the more that we think we're different, really, the more we're the same. And if we continue to be reminded of those kinds of things, we all get to walk in the same direction and sit there and go, yeah, we are on the right path here. Yeah, we can be there to help out the other person. We can sit there and help grow the game by doing A, B, C, D, or E. And so, I mean, that was another reason that we wanted to try and reach out here as a part of this series, is to remind everybody that, yeah, you're not alone in this. And at the same time, you might think you're really far away from those that feel the same way that you do, but you're really not.
Look, I think the hardest thing in life is always to ask for help. The easiest thing is to help someone. And I think sometimes, you know, we get that football connects us in so many different ways, and we're privileged enough here, and I'm privileged enough here to have made a lot of friends through football around the world. Some of the highest profile footballers around the world become friends because they're good people. And I think sometimes we focus on the top level of, you know, whether it be the English Premier League or La Liga or the MLS or the A-League. But I think sometimes we forget that the without that, what I would call the heart of football, which is its community, we don't have the professional game. And I think the power of what we can do, I mean, just simply talking to you, you know, hopefully your audience will listen a bit more about what happens in our club. I mean, I will share with you, there's a documentary that we're releasing very shortly. It's a 15-minute documentary about Wynnum that we've done. The history is, you know, it's very hard to describe an apple if you've never tasted one. So it's very hard to describe this club, which is 105 years old. So we put together a 15-minute documentary, which hopefully will show people what 100 years ago was like to where we are today, and the challenges this a club like ours has had, but what it means to a football community. And I think, you know, we'll show that. I'm happy to share that with you for you to show it on your network, because I think it'll tell a story. And I think, you know, for us, the more people that know can go to their sporting club, whether it be football or NFL, it doesn't matter. As long as you're involved in a community sport, we're going to improve as people.
How much has the Wynnum community learned about the Solomon Islands, and how much has the Solomon Islands community learned about Wynnum and what goes on since you're, 400, 500 miles apart? How much learning has gone on so far?
I think the Wynnum football community has taken the team to its heart because we share the same colours, we share the love of sport, and I think it's the values and the players. I mean, they're the most humble people you ever want to meet. So I think having them here, train here, being part of us, having similar resources, shared resources, they're part of the family. And I think that sort of has been a big part. But it's the same when we go to Solomon's. There's no – people have embraced us because I think they see the support and values that we're providing to the Solomon Football Federation and the Solomon Kings.
How far are we talking, you know, geographically from the eight franchises as they exist? Was I close with Brisbane to Honiara? How close was
it? Let me give it to you. To fly from Brisbane to Honiara, it's 3 hours by flight.
Okay.
To fly from Brisbane to New Zealand, it's 3.5 hours.
Okay.
To go to Fiji, so Brisbane's sort of like in between. So to go from, you know, for example, a lot of the places that Solomon Islands, you have to come to Australia to go to the next country, right? You can't fly direct. So, you know, you have to come to Brisbane to go to Vanuatu. So you've got to come to Brisbane to go to PNG. So there's a whole mix, and that's why, you know, for us being in Brisbane, sort of like a centre hub. But literally you are 3.5 hours by plane to all the hubs, you know. So, and you've got to go through, you need visas and you need passports and you need the whole process. It's not as simple as getting on an aeroplane.
I was going to ask, when it comes to the logistics of making something like this happen, even though you are doing the hub approach, what are folks not knowing about the things that you have to tackle administratively to make something like this go?
The biggest issue is visas. You know, I mean, you know, for example, to go to New Zealand, every Solomon Island player has to get a visa. And you've got to go through a process. Then you've got to go to PNG. Now, the issue will be, you know, if you get an injury, you have to bring another player on. You can't put them on a plane. You've got to get a visa for them. So the travel logistics is probably the biggest challenge. But there's been a lot of work put together by the OFC to work with each of the teams, how we make it work. That's probably been the biggest logistics of how we're going to get there. The other challenge is really which we – one of the reasons why we've put together a hub for the Solomons here in Brisbane is to get the understanding, you know, travel, work, training, feed, because now we go to the Solomon Islands and where we go to New Zealand, we've got 3 games in 10 days. Mm. So we'll leave Brisbane on a Thursday, we'll have a game on Sunday, we'll have a game on Wednesday, and then we'll have a game on Saturday. And then we fly back to Australia for 3 days and get on a plane again. So I think some of it we're prepared, but some of it you've actually just got to be ready to face when you've got. I mean, you know, it's the unknown, But what you can do is just be best prepared that you can be. And look, the biggest challenge has been is telling people not to panic. You know, there's no use panicking. You know, focus, you know, spend all your energy on the solution problem. And I think that's what we're telling everybody. Don't tell me the problem. Let's work. Let's not talk hours about the problem. What is the problem? Now let's spend the next 3 hours focus on a solution. And I think we're going to have that as we go along. Are we going to get it right along the way? We're going to make mistakes because this is new. But most importantly, we're united in the solution process. And I've got to put the head to, you know, the OFC. They've done a fantastic job. I mean, you try to put together a competition from, you know, 8 teams, 6 different countries, bring them together, different languages, you know, it's a big challenge, but they've done a fantastic job. And every game will be broadcast on FIFA Plus.
Then my question is for you, and I ask this in every franchise organization that is launching. No. I've always asked this question. I know that somewhere in your office, as you and I are talking right now, there's a to-do list. I mean, it could be on a Google Doc. It could be on, well, I mean, look, I'll show you right here for those that are just on the video side of things. I have the loose leaf binder notebooks with all my assignments and everything. I have the legal pads that have practically, let's see, I have 7 different designations from you in your past. So you probably end up using like both sides of the business card when I was trying to do my research about everything. So it's a legal pad, it's a wire bound notebook, it's a Google Doc, or is it one of those 6-foot by 8-foot white dry erase boards that's got a bunch of squiggles and lines and everything? Where is this to-do list that you have there for Solomon Kings, and what's the next thing you think you can cross off of it as you get ready for the premiere?
I think today was the big one, is having every player registered with passports, their medicals, their player contracts, all on the registration system. Now, cutoff point is 5 p.m. today. We finished it at 1 p.m. this afternoon. That was probably the biggest challenge to get through. You know, that was it. Without having all those players registered in the systems, you know, trying to get passports, valid passports, medicals, that's been a big challenge. But that's the big one. The players are in. We're ready to go. I think there's little bits and pieces coming through. But, look, I think the key is, you know, the simple part, getting the playing kit, the training kit. Because, really cool, we didn't know the team was official till end of September. The players weren't signed until November, early December. In the meantime, we're trying, and then we've got Christmas break. So we've got gear coming everywhere. So the actual playing strip doesn't arrive in Brisbane until Monday. And we leave on Thursday.
Ooh.
So that's the challenge. We've got plan Bs involved, but the reality, I think whether you've got 3 months or you get 12 months or you get 3 days, there's always the last minute things. And I think we've got some really good people that we've been able to break it down. Everyone takes the tasks, because I think if it was left to one person, they'd go crazy. But I think every afternoon we reflect what we've achieved and what we've got next to do. And as I said to you, most important thing is focus on the solution, not the problem.
And make sure that you wash all of the kits and the jerseys in cold before you're out the door on Thursday, before you get to your first match.
Absolutely.
I learned that mistake this week with just my normal laundry. Mr. Cram, I cannot thank you enough for doing this and opening the door for OFC Pro League. Go to ofcproleague.com. Then you hit the team section. You can do your research and find out about all the 8 individual first teams that are walking in the door with the OFC Pro League. Solomon Kings is where our focus is today. I would like to raise my hand and sit there and go, we'd like to come back and visit as the season goes and kind of just get the progress reports about what you're learning and what everybody's learning and what the education is like and all of those things. So I'd like to raise my hand now and say we'd like to come back. Is that okay?
We would love to give you the update of our journey and where we are, because I think it's an exciting journey and it's a little bit different to most. We would love to keep you updated of our journey over the next 5 months of how we progress both on and off the field.
Looking forward to it. So as always, my friend, great to see you. Thanks for dropping by. Be safe. And we cannot wait for this thing to get off the ground. Solomon Kings and everything that you're doing there at Wynnum. Can't thank you enough for dropping by.
Just make sure that you're following the black and yellow. That's all we want.
Great to catch up with Robbie, because when we taped that interview, locally it was about 10:30 East Coast time in the evening. Add 15 hours, and that was where that Robbie was in the middle of the afternoon in Brisbane, Australia. But it's great to find out about what's going on. There will be, and we will have as a part of our Roots programming, regular coverage of what's going on in the OFC Pro League, and we'll let you know what's going on. We're trying to catch up with as many of the clubs as we can, find out what it's like to have this thing start from scratch, and we'll have updates as the season goes along. Yeah, and you even have the first ever professional footballer from the island nations of Niue, and we're going to see if we can catch up with that story as well as we continue to tell the stories of the OFC Pro League. This is the Best of SDHAM from the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you. Thanks for dropping by, as you always do. And once again, our third guest this week, Michael Parkhurst, captain of Atlanta United in his playing days, and was integral to the defense that was there to give Atlanta United its MLS Cup championship. And what we are fortunate to do at SDH is during Fridays during the season, we catch up with Michael and Greg Garza through Beyond Goals Mentoring. We find out what it's like for them to be mentors, what it's like to mentee the next generation of athletes, what they're learning in the process, how it continues to grow. And that's the conversation this time around with Cap, where we get to find out how they grew in 2025, meaning Beyond Goals Mentoring, and what they're looking forward to in 2026. How hard is it for a professional athlete to turn off in gap time? When, you know, it's like, okay, it's the holidays. I know that, you know, we got family time, season's over, that kind of stuff. How hard is it to hit that light switch and just kind of go, I can shut down for a bit?
Yeah, and it's different when you're a professional athlete. I think that there's levels of turning it off. I don't think that, like right now, where I am in life, I can. Actually, I don't know if I can, because I still took Rhode Island calls over the break as we're figuring things out with the roster. But
questions on that too, but we'll get there.
Yeah. But, you know, I think that athletes, they live a different lifestyle, and you have to in order to have success. And so you can't completely turn off. And I mean that meaning you still need to run during the off season. You still need to watch what you intake, right?
Moderation. Yeah.
Yeah, moderation, exactly. And so, you know, you dim it, and you enjoy that. And for most athletes, that's dimming it is similar to us turning it off, because they're at such a high level throughout 11 months of the season that when you do get a time to dim it, it does feel nice. And you know, going for a run, going to work out, that's not even really considered really getting after it. That's the bare minimum.
Yeah. And cause, but then let me ask you this. Once you hit the dimmer switch, how difficult is it to go back and make sure that thing is already up to, you know, up to 11 once again? How hard is it? It's like, man, I really like this. I like not doing A, B, C, D, and E. It's just, you know, how hard is it to sit there and go 100% after a gap time?
It shouldn't be too tough. Okay. That's the benefit of hitting the dimmer, is that you get that time away, and that time away should increase the love mm-hmm. for the game and say, hey, man, I miss being out there. I miss doing those stuff. I can't wait to get back at it. And if it's not, that's a problem. And either you're in the wrong place or you need to do something to change the mind frame, getting back into things, or you need to make some lifestyle changes or something. Because, you know, after you dim or take a break, you should be excited to get back out there. And that doesn't mean, hey, the first day, am I excited to wake up at 6 a.m. and get going? No, okay, I get it, right? But there should be some excitement to get back out there, get working, and getting ready for the next season.
So then with your mentee age, do you get to impress upon them the idea of hitting that dimmer switch? Because I would imagine, you know, when you're 16, 17, 18, whatever, you know, 12 all the way up, it's got to be go, 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 go because of internal pressure, whether it's, you know, I've got to be better than this guy. That means I've got to be out there. I've got to be running at 4:30 in the morning. I've got to run 30 miles before 6 a.m. You know, Do these conversations register, especially with all the internal and peer pressure and parental pressure and all those kinds of things with mentees these days?
Yeah, for sure. And I just think that there's so many opportunities out there for kids that sometimes it's tough to shut off. Even if the team isn't having outdoor practices, there's indoor trainings, there's optional stuff, there's pickup things, right? There's a lot of opportunities to continue to play. But yeah, that's one of the things Greg and I always encourage. I take time away, get away from it a little bit, go play basketball, you know, go swimming, go be a kid, have fun, get away from the game a little bit. And, I think most of them do that. I do think that they take a little bit of a break and get away from it, which is nice, and it's needed. Because they're not at that high level yet of being paid to play and having to do that stuff. So they have to take advantage of not being at that level and getting to turn off instead of dim. Like, they can turn off for a little bit, and it's they're younger. They can regain that fitness quicker, right? So, and they can get back on the saddle a lot quicker than, you know, us old guys.
Yeah. Well, how hard is it to be a kid though these days? I mean, as a dad, I think you could look at it from that perspective. How hard is it to be a kid who's in athletics? But how hard is it to be a kid when you're attached to athletics the way that a lot of these athletes that you mentor are?
Well, my son would tell you that it's very tough, John. I mean, I ask him to vacuum at least once a week. He has to get the mail out of the mailbox all the way down at the bottom of the driveway that he walks past from school. So life is tough as a kid, John.
Yes.
It's not easy.
Well, and I remember, and you were, I imagine you were this way. It's like, it was so tough that you would play outside until the sun went down. And then the only time that you would go inside would be when parental unit is sticking their head out the front door and calling your name. And then you'd keep playing under the streetlights. And then they'd add a name. It's like, you know, it would be like first name, last name. It'd be first name, you know, first name, dinner's ready. Then after a couple of minutes, poke your head back out the door. First name, last name, dinner's ready, come inside. And then on the third one, when they go full name, then you know it's time to go inside because there's no other names that they can talk about, and it would be just louder at that point. It's like, John Freeman Nelson, get in this house right now.
Mm-hmm.
The increased element of importance over time.
Now, John.
Yes.
Now.
Yes, exactly.
That's it. I'll send a text to my son who's upstairs in the house because I've yelled three times and I've gotten no response. And so I'm going to text him because I know he'll see that and get his butt off electronics with buddies and come down.
Downstairs now.
Exactly. To the dinner that he helped none of.
Yes. So at least there's consistency is what you're saying. The idea of spending all that time trying to get out to the mailbox and mm-hmm. do all these kinds of things and make sure that, you know, look, the boss here knows that she doesn't want me anywhere near the kitchen. Look, Jason, Jarrett, Nick, and Maddie all know that they don't need me near a kitchen ever. They know this going in. Like, literally, they come up with, like, human shield. They just block the kitchen door. Any opportunity, it's like, hey, I'll cook. No, you won't. Because they don't want, you know, like food poisoning or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So trust me, I know about but I understand the idea of being involved in family, but I also know the value of being out of the way and making sure that it's edible. That I definitely understand.
Very true.
When you look at 25 for Beyond Goals, what sticks in your mind about what you and Greg were able to accomplish in 25?
I think there are a few big things. We got the college programming up and running. So we started that. We hired Zara.
Mm-hmm.
We started to do the video analysis on a broader scale, like on a monthly basis. Actually, it was probably bi-monthly basis. So those were three big things that we started last year or did last year that I think are big steps and that we're going to continue, obviously, this year. Yeah, we had, I think, 25% growth for the business, which is great.
There you go.
Yeah, so we're moving and grooving. We've got Zara lined up to go down to Inner Atlanta next week, speak with all the top level of the girls' teams down there. Greg will join her there for that. So that's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
She's on her way down to Orlando for preseason. So it works out perfectly.
Yes. The purple team, as they're getting ready for everything this season there. What's it like having Zara on board? Because I know it was something that you and Greg had discussed for quite some time as to add that third leg of the tripod, and it ends up being Zara. Let me go back to what was it that set her apart from everyone else that you were thinking about in that particular position? What set her apart?
Her personality. While she was in school, had worked with some youth soccer teams and just likes being around kids, enjoys speaking with them. And that's not for everybody. It can be challenging to speak to kids, and just be good with them and relate to them. It takes a certain person and a personality sometimes, especially for young adults. So that was a very attractive trait of hers. The fact that she had recently gone through the college experience is really beneficial as well. It's new and fresh in her mind as far as that experience, the recruitment period, the life on campus, the adjustments, all those things. We've identified that, you know, obviously in girls soccer, that is the pathway still. And I know that the draft is gone and now there are some younger females going pro, but still in general, the pathway is more towards college than anything else. And so having her on board with that experience recently is important. And, you know, the fact that she still is a pro and just starting off that career in a blossoming league like NWSL, that's beneficial too. I think that it turns some eyeballs when she talks.
Have you and Greg been able to learn anything from her? I know that she's learning from you guys about what it's like to be a mentor in these situations, but how much of a two-way street has that been in the short time that she's been with you?
Yeah, we have. She's impressed us with some of the things that she talks to mentees about. I'll give one example. She did an exercise with one of her mentees about values and what values were important to her and what values are important to the mentee. And so they wrote down 15 values that were important to them. And then they cut it down to 7, and then they cut it down to 3. And so it really had to hone them into, hey, what's most important to you? Why? How does that help you, right? How do we live by those values? How do we bring those on a daily basis type thing? So now that's something that Greg and I have both instituted into some of our mentoring sessions. So yeah, small example of, you know, just different experiences and different viewpoints that people have that, you know, you can always adapt and grow.
You mentioned video analysis, and I know that with younger individuals, they like to see things. They like the interactive idea of understanding something, and considering how there are individuals in the Parkhurst household that are upstairs and they play games and probably wear headphones to where they're just locked into that kind of stuff. Having that visual addition to what's going on there at Beyond Goals, what was it like for you and for Greg to figure out, okay, here's what we need to do? It's like videos out there, yes, but what do we need to specifically focus on? What was it like to add that dynamic in 25?
Yeah, it was fun. It was more, the toughest part always when you have this broad spectrum is how do you make it simple enough for the younger players and more less advanced players to understand and yet also have those tips for some of the older players that are a little bit more advanced? Like, how do you make sure that everyone is getting something out of it and you're not excluding anybody, whether on one end or the other? So that's always the biggest challenge. I mean, I think finding the clips, understanding what we want to show, is that's not the tough part. I think this year will be a little bit tougher now that we've already done it once, to find new, how do we advance it? How do we separate it from last year? So we're starting off the year next week, I think, maybe, with a defensive third. So instead of doing a exact position, we're kind of analyzing the defensive third, how we play in that area of the field. Where do we take risks? Where don't we? On the offensive side, defensive side, like looking at the back line in general, as far as their movement and how they combine with the defensive mids and those types of things. So we're going to start off with there with thirds and then get into individual positions later on in the year. So yeah, we'll adapt it.
You got zones to look at. You've got lines to look at, and you know, formations being the loose construct that they are. It's like, yeah, it might look like this, but then the whistle blows, it's all, you know, and then you get it all out and figured out. I mean, it's I would imagine that trying to find the ideas is easy, but then what you've got to do, what you and Greg and Zara have to do, is break it down to where you're talking with someone. And you don't go in with the notion that they know where you're coming from immediately. You've got to kind of dial it back and take everyone along for this ride, as opposed to assume that, okay, yeah, you know this and you know this, and if I was just to say something, then that would be that you're going to understand where I'm coming from, as opposed to just, all right, we'll dial it back and we'll sit there and we'll take it from absolute A and go A, B, C, D, E. I imagine that would be a bit of an adjustment for you and Greg as well when you started.
Totally. And that's why it helps that we've got the marketing team with us, because sometimes they will be like, hey, have you thought about talking about this? And sometimes it's really simple. And I'm like, no, actually, I haven't. Right. Because we think it's obvious, and it's not obvious to everybody. And so, you know, I think it's nice having people that aren't at a high level sometimes within the group to make sure that we're seeing everything and talking about everything that we can to help players as much as possible.
And when you look back at the questions that were asked of you and Greg and Zara in 25, was there a group of questions or a particular topic that they kept coming back to, meaning all of the mentees on the whole? Was there one or a couple of ideas that kept circling back? Was there a commonality that you guys had to continue to address more often than not last year?
That's a good question. I think that a couple of the top ones for me were, confidence is always the biggest one. Mm-hmm. Usually it's, how do I get my confidence back? What can I do to improve my confidence? Sometimes, and along those lines, is how do I play better in bigger games, right? How do I translate, you know, practice? How do I become a game player instead of just a practice player, basically?
Yeah.
In other words. And then for the older kids, it's more questions about what do I need to do in preparation to try and go to college. So those were the main things that I saw repeatedly. And so, you know, for sure, we'll have a little bit more of a focus on some of those things this year.
So how do you get your, you know, when you and Greg and Zara are talking to these players, how do you tell them to get their groove back? Because, I mean, there's a lot of folks that would sit there, and if the mojo's gone, they're like, you know, they could be trying everything short of going to a fortune teller trying to figure out how to get it back. When you have those conversations about getting your confidence back after they think they've lost it, even though they might have just kind of misplaced it, and I think there's a difference. Mm-hmm. What are those conversations like?
Anything from what constitutes a good game, what constitutes a good practice in your eyes, and trying to reframe that, because getting away from goals and assists to, hey, did I work hard? Did I bring a good attitude? Did I control the things I can control? Right, stacking small wins. You don't have to become the best player. Go from the worst to the best, right? We talk about getting to neutral first. You know, controlling the ups and downs within a practice, within games, game to game. So there's a few different tools and outlooks that we try and have depending on who the player is, how old they are, how down they are, where we're just trying to improve slowly on things and just reset the mind frame of what is confidence? How do I perceive confidence? And, you know, what in my mind do I have to do to get to regain this confidence? Because a lot of times they think they have to do way too much.
And I think that, you know, to your point, I think that if they think they have to do too much, it might be just taking that first step and understanding that it's a part of that process. You can't just go from 1 to 100. You got to go 2, 5, 10, 15, 20. You can't just jump and think that it's going to be back at 100%.
Exactly. And that's why we talk about small goals too, right? We've got these overarching goals and, okay, but let's dial it down to things that we can control. And so what can we do on a weekly basis to get better? And that can help with confidence too, right? Checking things off a list feels nice and it feels good. So, okay, let's check things off the list this week, right? What can we do to get better, right? Regardless of practice and what's going on and what do you got going on, right? What can we do to get better this week? And, you know, small wins like that can help with confidence too.
Our resident mogul in training, Michael Parker, is from Beyond Goals Mentoring, dropping by. What was the last book you read?
Ooh, John, it's been a little while,
yeah.
But
uh-huh.
I'm picking up my next book at the library today. I just got the email.
At the library?
Oh, I always use the library, John.
Nice. Where's your card? Where's your library card?
Oh, I always tell them I forgot my library card and I just give them my ID.
Ha!
I have no idea where my card is. But Essentialism is the book that I'm going to start reading.
Essentialism?
Yes.
Okay. So what in the wild world of sports is essentialism, sir?
I have no idea if it relates to sports at all.
But doesn't necessarily have to, though.
Yeah. But somebody, I can't even remember who right now. Somebody had recommended the book, and I had looked at it briefly, and I thought, you know what? I think this will be interesting to read, because that's my toughest problem is finding books that I think will be interesting. And I don't like reading fiction. I like reading things that are going to help me or improve me, or that I find like Shoe Dog was really good, interesting to me. And just I like things that, I don't know, are going to help me in life.
According to the Amazons, mm-hmm. Essentialism by Greg McKeown, The Disciplined Pursuit of Less.
Yeah.
Essentialism isn't about getting more done in less time. It's about getting only the right things done.
Yeah.
That's deep, man.
I'll let you know how deep it is.
Well, it's like, have you ever found yourself stretched too thin? Are you often busy but not productive? Do you feel like your time is constantly being hijacked? If you answered yes to any of these, the way out is the, in italic font, Way of the Essentialist. So Greg McKeown's book is the next one on your list. I get that. Okay.
Yep, must start it tonight.
All right. Before you get out of here and go and grab the McKeown book on being an essentialist, full disclosure, I have already purchased the sweatshirt that is available from Rhode Island FC.
Thank you, John.
It was an absolute no-brainer. The Hope, Power, Friendship, Providence sweatshirt is out, and it is by Frog and Toad. Collaboration with Providence-based Design Print. All proceeds from the Hope, Power, Providence hoodie benefiting Brown University's EverTrue Support Fund, which provides immediate and long-term assistance to students affected by the tragedy that occurred on December 13th of 25. Very, very cool. So obviously, when it gets here, because I think it's already out the door, the next time you visit, I will be wearing it, just to let you know. But no, it was a slam dunk for me. I saw this and I'm like, yeah, I'm dropping money to help that. That was a no-brainer for me.
Well, thank you, John. I appreciate it. And I'll bring you a jersey when I come down with me. Make sure that you've got one of those.
Oh, see, you would be the man. As you're getting ready for the 26th season, there was a signing yesterday that we mentioned, Leo Afonso.
Yes.
He is now in the fold, I imagine, as the inverted left winger, getting to set up that right foot. Leo is a part of the conversation here for 26. Nicely done. Who are you signing next?
We've got a couple guys signed, but, you know, the registration and blah, 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 we can't announce. But we should announce We've got one outgoing today, I think. Mm-hmm. That's a big one. And then we've got one incoming that I think we can announce on Monday. And I don't know when the others are going to be able to announce, but we've got probably two or three ready to announce when we can. And then we're still working on one more right now. Not US based. So
you got to work on the blah, 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 blah with that guy.
Yeah. Well, there's always challenges when you're working with some South American, clubs,
mm-hmm. and individuals attached to players. And it's like, yeah,
it takes a while.
Yeah. And sometimes, it takes, going to court and,
whoa, yeah. What a disaster.
We've hit that one pretty hard, and it looks like Thiago might be heading to Palmeiras, so it looks like there's a possibility that he could be transferred twice before Atlanta United gets paid once.
It's crazy that FIFA has
that. Now that we're kind of in that, what's it been like for you as the mogul in training? What did you learn about yourself last season?
Just that you can't assume that communication is going to be had, that you need to be upfront about it and make sure that you're being part of the solution in that regard. I think we can always get more organized and put better processes in place for different things around the club so that we're doing things in the right, proper manner. I also think we learned that you have to be patient when, you know, these teams are going through tough times and you're churning through managers and, you're firing coaches so quickly. I won't say myself, but there were some people within the group, you know, where you get nervous when we go through a stretch, like we did. We've done it 2 years in a row, right? Where first year we were bottom of the table midway through the season. And even last year, we were outside of the playoff table for most of the season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, mid-season, we're not playing well at home. We've opened up the new stadium. We're not scoring. Things aren't going great, you know, and pressure starts to build. But, you know, if you are confident with the people you have and they're doing the right things, you know, you hope that things turn around. And so, you know, in the end, after 2 years, you look back and say, hey, man, we made it to the Eastern Conference semifinals twice. We won it once. It's pretty successful.
So then can I ask you an official question and you can choose to answer it however you choose to answer?
Sure.
The current disagreement between the Players Association and the league, 38 bargaining sessions, I think, according to the PA, and right now there is no collective bargaining agreement between the players and the league. This is going to be such an overarching question. Where are things right now? What is your level of confidence? This is almost like a three-parter. Where are you right now in confidence, in discussions, feedback, all of these kinds of things? What's the update on where things stand between the players and the owners in the league right now?
I think we're getting there. I think that there was rightful gripes on the player side with some of the things that some of the teams have done in the past and what they've gotten away with that needs to change. And that's a good thing for everybody. And I think that those, for the most part, those changes have been addressed and have been agreed upon. There's still some little things. I shouldn't say little, because obviously they're important enough that agreements haven't been signed. But I do think that an agreement will come before the season. My guess is, just based off of experience and how I was part of the MLS ones, it probably won't get done until closer to the season start, right, where the pressure really mounts.
Hey, training camp's coming. You got one of those.
Yeah, and even, I mean, in MLS, we went through preseason without the agreement signed, right? So, you'd love to say that it'll be signed before then, but one side will probably dig in and, you know, use that leverage and whatever. But I really don't foresee and wouldn't want either side to do anything, you know, drastic. We want to play games and make sure this league continues to grow in the right way. And players need to be taken care of, no doubt. There's absolute bare minimums that need to be taken care of. And that's a good thing. So I think that some of the things that we're still disagreeing upon, it's not that anymore, which is good. But you know, it's tough being on this side. I feel for the players, and I want them to get what they deserve while also protecting the league, right? Because it's not like we're MLS. We had a team fold last year. You know, so we've got teams that don't have billionaire owners that are losing substantial money every year. So, you know, you have to be a little bit careful as well.
Thank you for that. It was, like I said, with part of the topics and everything, literally, I figured I would ask. And like I said, you could have answered it however you wanted to. But thank you for your candor in that. I know I've kept you into added time. And I apologize for that, because I know that you have a fantastic weekend planned. And hopefully it is as quiet or as rambunctious as you wish. And that folks answer texts when they're upstairs, when it's time to help out with dinner. It's great to see you, my friend. And
likewise.
Let me know when you're coming down, because then
I will.
We could kind of break bread or something. Who knows?
Let's do it.
All right.
I'll let you know.
Be safe, my friend. We'll see you soon.
Hey, John. Have a good weekend.
There goes Michael Parkhurst, everybody. And Parky is for his first visit here in 2026. And it's always good to catch up with him. Remember, at BG Mentoring on the Twitters, beyondgoalsmentoring.com. He, Greg Garza, started stuff, and I wanted to kind of look back at 25, kind of get geared into 26, and kind of do a review from everything that they've learned, and we'll go from there. But yeah, what I saw over at Rhode Island FC was literally because of what happened up at Brown University in Providence. It literally popped up into my email. And for me, it was an absolute no-brainer to grab that to help out at Brown University. But yes, their Hope Power Providence hoodie helps out and benefits the Evertrue Support Fund for what happened back about a month ago at Brown University. So very, very cool stuff. And it's like I told Parky, next time he's on, I'm going to wear it just to let him know that it made it. So there you go. All right. It's always great to catch up with Michael, always great to catch up with Greg and find out what's going on at Beyond Goals Mentoring. At BG Mentoring on the 280 character at beyondgoalsmentoring.com. And that's usually Friday mornings, 9:30 Eastern time, Eastern U.S., where we get to catch up with them and find out what's going on when it comes to mentoring the next generation of footballers. So once again, for those not familiar, it is the SDH Network, 9:05 a.m. Eastern time. And it is Monday through Friday across all of the platforms of SDH and the Soccer Down Here Network. It is on Soccer Down Here YouTube. It is on Soccer Down Here X, Soccer Down Here Twitch, twitch.tv/soccerdownhere, where we try to bring you as different a scope when it comes to growing the game as possible. We do have our weekly recaps, catch up with our experts, find out what's going on in Major League Soccer and Atlanta United, and cover Atlanta United as best we can. This past week, we had guests all the way from local when it comes to the flagship station of Atlanta United, to our coverage of the Soccer for US POD and Bart Keeler, Casey White joining us from North Carolina, Rob Edwards joining us from London, England, Chris Doran, play-by-play voice of Columbus Crew, Dylan Butler, MLSsoccer.com, Robbie Cryam from Solomon Kings and from Wynnum Wolves, Nino Torres and Nico Moreno from Sounder at Heart and Pulso Sports. It was Cody Case from Valdosta High. It was Michael Parkhurst. It was Philip Goodrum from Lexington, SC. And it was an opportunity to go one end to the other. And that's just a small portion of what we were able to do this week at SDHAM. So like, friend, be a part of the conversation all the time when it comes to what we're doing and the stories that we get to tell and the news that we get to share. So once again, that is the best of SDHAM for everybody here at the Soccer Down Here Network, the SDH Network. For Jason, for Jarrett, for Nick, for Maddie, Sophia, I'm John Nelson. Thanks for dropping by, as you always do. Play it safe, everybody. Mucha Platia. We'll catch up with you again next week.